I think that's a profoundly abusive thing to imply or to say to a child, that they could be born in the wrong body. I mean, that just having that in your head is just, I think, is horrible. What the gender activists or the trans activists do is they say, well, no, if they act more typical for their opposite sex, then they are the opposite sex. So they think, well, if there are gay kids, there must be trans kids. So of course we need to give them all these, surgeries and hormones. And of course, people will deny that this stuff is happening. They'll deny that the children are getting double mastectomies, even though we have the data.
And I think it's bonkers. And I'm willing to say that. I think it's completely insane.
A lot of these kids have autism. A lot of them are gay. There are a lot of reasons that cause people to have distress about their bodies.
Why is it dangerous to believe in this gender spectrum?
Yeah, I'm trying to imagine a world where it wouldn't be dangerous.
Welcome to another episode of Heretics. Now, firstly, let me apologize. There was no episode on Saturday. You guys know I do tend to do the Heretics production, high production, sophisticated episodes on Mondays and Thursdays, or Sundays and Wednesdays if you're in America or somewhere else where the time is different or whatever it might be. And then on Saturdays or Fridays in other places, I do these kinds of things I've done in the week on my live channels. It tends to be a little bit more relaxed and maybe tabloidy or sensationalist or pop culture related, just to take away from the fizz and the heatedness, the heat of the midweek stuff. However, this week I have been recording my audiobook for my book, The Psychology of Secrets, out on April the 11th, available to pre-order now. The Psychology of Secrets, My Adventures with Murderers, Cults, and Influencers. It's a journalistic, delving, gonzo kind of approach into the maddest stories of our times. Some really weird stuff there. So you can get it to pre-order now, I'm pretty sure, on Amazon. And I think if you're in other countries and things, you can get it on Kindle soon. I don't know exactly, but do have a look at that. I wasn't even going to mention that, but I had to mention why I didn't do the Saturday stuff. And that's because I've been doing the audiobook, which is quite an endeavor. It is like, 330-odd pages, just reading it over and over. And I've got a cough. I've got a bloody cough. But thankfully, it's a bloody good book, if I say so myself. Anyway, I'll try and catch up and do an extra episode at some point. But now, it's only Travis Brown. Travis Brown has a YouTube channel called The Signal. He is very friendly and works with Peter Boghossian, who's I'm a fan of, and he's interviewed lots of really cool people like Stella O'Malley and Helen Joyce about gender ideology and combating woke myths. He did a documentary series called The Woke Reformation, another called Uncomfortable Truths, The Reality of Gender Identity Ideology. He makes films that challenge dominant narratives and dogmas with the hope that people will think more critically about their beliefs. So go and follow his channel. It's called The Signal, just Travis Brown, The Signal. He's got his locals page and things. You can find all the links there as well. Twitter as well, Become The Signal on Twitter. So you'll find him easily. Just type Travis Brown and The Signal. And he's great. What an absolute lovely guy. An American in England. What's he doing over here? I'd actually done the street epistemology, which is when he and Peter Boghossian, that is, they get you to sort of stand on a sign on the floor saying agree or disagree or strongly disagree, and they strongly agree, and they ask you certain questions like, would you stay with your wife if aliens changed her genitals to the opposite sex, or is America or Britain freer, or are men as funny as women, or funnier, or the other way around, that kind of thing. So we had done that the previous night. I'd interviewed Peter Boghossian, who's coming out soon on this podcast. Not coming out in that sense, but his episode will be. And that was with Yasmin Mohammed. I did it, who's also got it's incestuous. The podcasters, we're incestuous. We're all interviewing one another. Anyway, and in case you think this has become too trans-obsessed, because last episode was also about gender, which was my sort of debate with Katie John Wendt, the next couple episodes are Yasmin Mohammed about Islam. She is an ex-Muslim, and she's just absolutely wonderful. And Peter Boghossian after that, about plagiarism and academic standards in universities, and DEI and stuff like that. So it's a big mix of stuff. It's all happening. So don't worry if it's becoming too homogenous in this this investigation into the heterodox world of madness or something. So, yes, follow Travis Brown, and I hope you enjoy this episode of Heretics. Let's get your thoughts on whether gender is binary.
I guess I take issue with the question because gender, to me, seems like a superfluous concept. It doesn't seem to be really grounded in physical reality. So I would say sex is quite, I'm not a biologist, but sex is pretty obviously binary. You have what are called DSDs, which are disorders of sexual development. So there are some people who may have a mixture of chromosomes that are odd or rare or, you know, not fully developed genitalia. And these people, you know, the trans activists want to say they're like a new category of person. But the reality is that we're all male and we're all either male or female. And people just have these disorders that put them into a not exactly a different category. It's just a disorder. Their body didn't develop in the way that it should have. So in terms of gender, again, I just think gender is kind of almost like a useless topic, a useless framework, because it can kind of mean anything to anyone. And that's how these people get away with basically saying, well, you know, my gender doesn't match my sex body, therefore I'm going to identify as X, you know, as the opposite sex or as non-binary or gender fluid or whatever. So to me, it's not a helpful word, makes sense.
Is this a relatively new thing, this idea that gender and sex are two completely separate things?
Well, I think from probably the first time gender was used, I think perhaps the initial reason to use that was to develop two separate concepts so that you could have this other category. I believe it was invented by John Money, who did the experiments on the those twins and raised, basically it was a botched circumcision. And, you know, he told these parents of this kid that they should just, you know, basically operate and cut off his testicles and raise him as a girl. And this was like the first experiment. I can't remember if it was in the 60s or 70s, but it turned out horribly. And the guy ended up killing himself because he just got addicted to drugs and alcohol. He felt like a man. The experiment didn't work.
He'd been raised as a girl.
Correct.
There was a botched circumcision and there were twins. Right. Boys, and the doctor was like, right, well, let's just raise this one as a girl and not tell.
Exactly.
He not told?
He was not told. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Wait, well, that seems like, I mean, it's one person, but that's, as far as we can go, that's pretty conclusive that, okay, you can't just be raised. It's not just a social construct.
Right. It's not just a matter of how you're raised. We have biological imperatives as males or females. We have, you know, even we're psychologically affected by our biology and to develop down a particular pathway. Now, there are some people that, you know, diverge from that a little bit. They end up often being either gay or just perhaps more effeminate male or more masculine woman. And the reality is that's totally fine and we shouldn't care about that. But what the gender activists or the trans activists do is they say, well, no, if they act more typical for their opposite sex, then they are the opposite sex. You know, they're born in the wrong body. So that's where the gender concept comes in play. But I think that's a profoundly abusive thing to imply or to say to a child that they could be born in the wrong body. I mean, that just having that in your head is just, I think, is horrible.
It's extraordinary. And this gender thing, I mean, how pervasive it is has been quite shocking to me, because I was at a friend's family dinner and these people who are not very political or not very politically active or anything like that. And I think the grandmother was saying like, oh, I don't know, I think a boy is a boy and a girl's a girl or whatever.
Yeah.
And then the mums who were like in their 40s or 50s were saying, no, mom, you don't understand. Mom, that's gender and that's not sex. You don't realize.
Right.
And these are people who are not political. And they've just heard these little sound bites.
Right.
And now we've got, and in the comments, there will be people saying, Andrew, you don't understand. It's a difference between gender and sex. And
like, yeah, right.
But who has ever said that gender, where has this come from? Is it Judith Butler?
Partly, yeah. There are a number of people that have pushed this concept. Judith Butler is a key figure in this. She wrote the book Gender Trouble as well as a few other books, which I read, and it's virtually incomprehensible.
Yes,
I think she actually, have you read it?
Yeah, I had to at university. That's what they make you study.
Okay. Yeah.
English. I wasn't doing gender. It's English literature degree. I'm reading Butler.
Oh, that's the worst thing you could read. She actually won an award for the worst sentence. I forget who puts that out, but it was from Gender Trouble. I think she writes that way and obfuscates for a number of reasons, because apparently when she speaks, she, you know, in public, she's lucid and she's comprehensible. Mm. And I think Helen Joyce told me that when she talked about the environment, she was completely lucid. And Helen's takeaway from that was that was something that actually matters and that you can actually talk about in a clear, coherent way. Whereas this gender stuff, it's all just made up. I mean, she basically implies in the book that sex is itself, not gender, but sex itself is a social construct. And so, but she writes it in such a way that there's some plausible deniability because it's so confusing and so seemingly complex that people, when I tell them that, they're like, oh, well, that's not really what she meant. Right. But it pretty clearly is. And people have taken it to mean that.
Okay. I'm going to lose a few viewers when I say this, but Jordan Peterson, who I like, okay, when he talks about religion, goes that way as well. He's like incredibly lucid most of the time. When he talks about psychology, it's like, oh, that's really easy to understand. Right. And then suddenly like, oh, and the God and the thing with the world, you know, that's good and evil, you know? Yeah. And you're like, what exactly, you know? So I guess it is a religion and I feel like it's a religion. Does that make sense to you as well?
Yeah, yeah. And on the Jordan Peterson note, it is unfortunate that he almost veers into postmodern territory when it comes to talking about religion, the supernatural and spirituality. Because otherwise he is usually quite lucid and I enjoy a lot of what he has to say. But yeah, I think that often people resort to that kind of fuzzy language. I was just talking about this with Carl Benjamin and Peter Boghossian yesterday because they were talking about the gay surrogacy thing, whether or not this is immoral. And Carl was basically trying to give voice to some of the more religious conservatives who have a problem with it and trying to kind of flesh out why it is that they have a problem with it. And in order to do that, you know, he was essentially kind of using this kind of fuzzy language of, you know, spiritual and these sort of ephemeral things that we cannot quite measure and we cannot quite use data for. And I think there's a place for that. But when you want to be clear about something, especially when it comes to the sex binary and whether or not we should be transitioning children, that is giving them puberty blockers and hormones, et cetera, I think we have to be really precise with our language and be very clear about what's actually going on. Mm-hmm. And the reality is that what's actually going on for most of these kids is they have a lot of comorbidities. There's a lot of mental health issues it's all a mental health issue, but you know, as I'm sure you know, other people have talked about, a lot of these kids have autism. A lot of them are gay. There are a lot of reasons that cause people to have distress about their bodies. And from what I understand, it seems to me that all of that distress could be alleviated with the right treatment. That is to say, with psychological help, or sometimes there's, I interviewed a detransitioner, Camille Kiefel, and no one could figure out what was causing all of her distress, but it ended up being a combination of like high inflammation and a bunch of other physical problems. But she didn't need the double mastectomy that she got to solve that problem. so there's a whole host of factors that lead people down that path.
You know, who's the worst with the obfuscating is Neil deGrasse Tyson.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, unfortunately,
The planets are all, like, a planet can become a star, so people can be fish.
Right. sort of talking about qubits, which is in quantum computing. You know, it's neither a one or a zero, but there are, like, four or five different states that it can be in. So maybe, you know, gender is like that. And again, he will use gender and sex interchangeably. And most of these people do that. But then if you try to pin them down and say, well, no, are you talking about sex? Then, again, they'll just obfuscate and they'll try to, you know, it's irritating. It's hard to actually pin people down and be clear about what it is they're talking about.
I find that really frustrating. And that's for people. Everyone's going to comment going, you're talking gender and sex. Right, we've clarified that. That's, you can't get away with that. Right, we're going to get into how we're tackling some of this in the wrong way in a bit. But tell me, why is it dangerous to believe in this gender spectrum?
Why is it dangerous? Yeah, I'm trying to imagine a world where it wouldn't be dangerous. I think, you know, as some feminists use it and some people use it, perhaps it's not dangerous in the sense that, you know, if all you mean by gender is the expression of, you know, of your sexed body, in other words, like if you want to be more masculine as a woman or more feminine as a man, if that's what people mean by gender, then I think it's fine. I think it's a little too confusing. Again, it's hard to pin down. But the reality is, because people conflate sex and gender, then a whole host of problems follow from that. So, you know, men can just say that they were born in the wrong body, and often we see now, they don't even need to get surgeries to say that they're trans. They don't even need to get, you know, take hormones or any of those things to say, well, no, I'm actually a woman. You know, like Leah Thomas, or I think it was William Thomas before the transition, but not much of a transition, still a fully intact male, which you can see in the swimsuit pictures. I'm sure you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
It's... And then, of course, you know, he entered into the female swimmer spaces, took showers with them, you know, fully nude. And none of them actually even knew that a male was going to be joining them. And so they were all, you know, shocked by it. And they were told that they needed to seek therapy if they were uncomfortable with this, rather than the people addressing this and say, oh, yeah, we'll just remove him from your team or give him a separate locker room or whatever. No, they said, well, you all just need therapy to deal with this. I mean, it's so. And then, of course, the worst part about all of this is that if you believe in gender as this almost like spiritual construct, this soul that can be in the wrong body, then of course, you know, if adults need a transition, then why wouldn't children need a transition? I mean, the argument is you're just prolonging their anguish and their suffering if you don't give them the puberty blockers so that it can pass as their true sex. So, you know, and if I'm sure you've talked to others about this, but, you know, giving kids puberty blockers and hormones will often make them sterile. I mean, for the rest of their life, it'll ruin their sexual function. And it's hard to imagine that too many of these people are too satisfied with their outcomes. And it's difficult to get that data, but we know more and more that a bigger and bigger percentage of people are detransitioning. So
it's true. Like if you believe in the ideology, if this is something you really believe in, and again, this is something we have with religion sometimes, it's like, if you really believe in the Bible and that, then you should be stoning gay people. Like if you right. believe this, if this is your book and you're going to go by, I think you should be doing it. And I'd almost respect them more if they did that. People are going to take that out of context. I don't want people to do that. And if you believe in the ideology, gender ideology, then kids should be doing that.
Yeah.
Because they're going to look much better. They're going to pass better.
Right.
They're not going to get the Adam's apple. It does tend to be men into women, doesn't it? Not going to get the Adam's apple. You know, I was, by the time I was 14, I was like 6'2" already, Adam's apple, all that stuff. I would have a much better life if I wanted to be, if I could be a woman or whatever, had I done so beforehand.
Right.
That's the dangerous thing here, is that it's happening to kids. And like, what do you know as a kid?
Right. Yeah. I mean, there are reasons, obviously, that, you know, we outlaw tattoos until a certain age, or drinking, or joining the military, or being able to rent a car. I mean, there's a number of things that we don't allow kids to do for a good reason. But then when it comes to this issue, so many people just jump on board. And I think a lot of times they do it because they think that they want to be on what they say is the right side of history. So they were perhaps on the wrong side of history, or a number of people were on the wrong side of history about the gay issue, or, you know, going further back about, you know, black people not being able to vote, et cetera. So they want to be ahead of the curve, and they want to be ultra progressive. So they think, well, if there are gay kids, there must be trans kids. So of course we need to give them all these, you know, surgeries and hormones. And of course people will deny that this stuff is happening. They'll deny that children are getting double mastectomies, even though we have the data. And then as soon as they find out that it's true, they immediately switch and say, it's strange because they're kind of aghast by this, right? They're horrified that this can't be happening. And then as soon as they see evidence that it is happening, they say, oh, well, I mean, it must be a good thing. Clearly.
Yeah, they have to square it with themselves.
Yeah, yeah.
Man, and what got you initially interested in this topic? Why is this sort of, what work were you doing that led you into this?
Yeah, so there's a couple of reasons that I'm interested. The initial one being that I grew up with fundamentalist Christians, and I kind of agree with you that I respect them a little bit more in the sense that they're trying to be as literal as possible with their interpretation of the Bible. Obviously, anyone can have any interpretation of it, but from my own reading, I've studied the Bible quite a lot. I mean, it does talk about stoning gays, for instance, and even in the New Testament, it's very anti-gay. People say, oh, it's only in the Old Testament. That's not true. You know, I grew up with that. I believed it very strongly. I myself was a fundamentalist, super conservative Christian living out in the middle of nowhere. And it was very kind of cult-like. You know, it was very dogmatic. If you disagree with this, you're going to hell. You know, it was psychologically very challenging. Eventually, I saw the kind of moral problems with that worldview, and I left it behind. And moved to Seattle, Washington, and then Portland, Oregon, to very, very progressive places. And I thought, oh, these are my people. You know, these liberals, I'll fit in here. And then I slowly started to realize, probably in like 2010, 2011, and then especially when Trump got elected, that, wow, there's a lot of the same kind of dichotomous thinking here, where anyone who's a Republican is a bigot and a white supremacist. They wouldn't tell you that you're going to hell. They'll just tell you that, you know, you're not fit for society. And so that struck me as pretty bizarre. And then, you know, I met Peter Boghossian, became friends with him, and he started talking about intersectionality being a religion, and that clicked for me. That made a lot of sense. And so I was looking at his work and James Lindsay and Helen Pluck Rose and reading a lot about that. And so I thought, wow, this is so akin to what I grew up with. It's just kind of a repackaging. So this is almost like a new religion, not just intersectionality, but these identity politics, this identity politics ideology, or what's called critical social justice, or I just call woke ideology because it's easier. So I started to make a series on this idea that there's this new kind of unorganized cultish religion that's popping up and is placing, you know, heavy emphasis on your immutable characteristics and saying that that's all that you are. And, you know, there are these oppressor versus oppressed classes. And if you're a white heterosexual male, you're evil. And if you're, you know, black trans lesbian, you have some kind of elevated status. And so, you know, I made a whole series about that. And I was just going to do another episode on the topic of gender because it kind of fits into that identity politics category. But then when I started to scratch the surface of it, I realized that it was a really complex topic and there was so much to it. And I had an opportunity to interview so many people about it. So I separated the series and turned it into its own thing.
Hey, it's Andrew. If you're enjoying Heretics, there's another podcast I want to recommend to you, especially if climate change, global conflicts, and an upcoming election are making you feel like we're on the brink of disaster. What Could Go Right is hosted by Progress Network founder Zachary Carabel and executive director Emma Varvalukas. On What Could Go Right, the hosts sit down with expert guests to discuss the world's most pressing issues without resorting to pessimism or despair that we hear so often. Instead, they look back at how far society has come and look forward at what it will take to achieve an even brighter future. Is progress on the way? They may not have all the answers, but on What Could Go Right, they're asking the key questions. Tune in to hear interviews with upcoming guests like writer Coleman Hughes, CNN host Fareed Zakaria, and economist Alison Schrager. If you're looking for a weekly dose of optimistic ideas from smart people, join them every Wednesday on What Could Go Right, available wherever you get your podcasts.
Interesting. Yeah, and your work is great as well.
Thank you.
And what's the name of your channel?
The Signal Productions.
Okay, and you've got some great series there.
Yeah.
I mean, people ask me as well, why gender? And it's, oh, are you obsessed with gender? I feel like I agree with everything you've said. I used to do a lot on cults and things, and this seems to me like a cult. And I think gender is the place where it is just the most obviously insane.
Yeah.
Like, if you need the one place where there's the 2 + 2 = 5, the Orwellian thing of like the, you've got to say this to adhere to the party, even though to show the litmus test of how ideologically captured you are, the UN, and how pervasive this is as well in mainstream institutions, the UN tweeting trans lesbians are lesbians and things like that. That is like the moment where you're like, okay, this is the litmus test. If you can see that and you go, you know, if you're going, yes, I will also say this, you've been captured.
Right.
And what you said before also was really interesting, that it's something I noticed as well. I obviously met over the years a lot of people who left cults, interviewing them. Time after time, they've became super woke, like really.
Yeah, interesting.
I think it's, you know, if you come from somewhere where there's a lot of homophobia, gay people are bad, these people are bad, whatever, it's natural to go, I'm going to go the opposite way.
Yeah.
I suppose like eventually the thing to learn is that humans do that. We're all religious. We're all tribal, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I definitely, this is, would be pre the term woke in public consciousness. But, you know, when I left the kind of religious right, I was very interested in anarchy and far left, you know, kind of anarchistic idealism. But that quickly fell apart for me. It didn't really make much sense. I joined some anarchistic groups, but there was always a leader. And I was like, well, that's odd. And then having seen firsthand the manifestation of some of this ideology in Portland, I started to distance myself from it and realized that this is just, it's based on faulty premises, and two, it's just really unhealthy. And it really is that same kind of, I think these people have the same kind of religious architecture in their brain that says, on my side, good, not on my side, bad. And therefore, you know, they engage in just horrible behavior. And a lot of those people ended up being in Antifa and, you know, kind of the militant part of the left wing. So I'm glad I left that behind and didn't get fully indoctrinated into that.
Yeah, it's amazing the confidence a lot of these people have, especially those who have left former cults that they often joined, weren't even born into. Mm. They join a cult, then they join another one, and they're just as sure the next time.
Yeah,
I've had so many people, again, former interviewees, who have seen some of the work I've been doing recently and have left public comments, just, Andrew, you've disappointed me so much. I thought you were better than this. That's such a horrible phrasing. Like, I thought you were better than this, because it implies that the person saying it is the person who is better.
Yeah.
And they have an understanding, a moral arbiter here of this is what better is, and you haven't aspired to it. What a horrible thing.
Yeah. That's very demeaning and ridiculous. And I think that this idea of, like, people bouncing from one cult to another leads me to really one of the main things I'm interested in, which is the talking about meaning, which I touch on in the first episode of my series on gender, because I think that's really like an underlying problem in so much of this stuff. I think it's largely, or at least partly, why people grab onto these ideologies and become so dogmatic, so stringent, and so nasty, as you mentioned, because it gives them a sense of purpose. It places them in a particular position that is kind of above everyone else, right? And again, it gives them a sense of meaning. And I think there is a crisis of meaning, especially with the, and I'm not religious, but there's been clearly a decline of traditional religion. And then you see all these new woke religions pop up, and it gives people, like I said, a sense of purpose and meaning. And I think that's part of why people act so insane about a lot of this stuff, or with a lot of this stuff, because it's their sense of identity. It's, you know, it's something beyond this simple material world in a way.
Are you familiar with the work of A.J. Jacobs?
I'm not, no.
So he, almost in a comical sort of way, but also quite seriously, he goes out on these sort of endeavors where he writes a book about a mad thing that he does for a year.
Okay. And
so he decided to take the Old Testament literally for one year.
Oh, I have heard of this, I think.
Yeah, he's great.
Yeah.
And so he did stone an adulterer. He just sort of threw some pebbles at a guy in the park who told him he'd cheated on his wife. So he's just throwing little pebbles at him and things. And apparently the guy wasn't happy. It wasn't like a funny thing. The guy was annoyed at him. It was a whole big thing. And then, you know, his wife would try to annoy him then by sitting on every chair in the house, so he couldn't sit on the chair for like 24 hours or something like that. So, you know, that was all quite funny. But then the serious part of that was that A.J. Jacobs, after reciting enough prayers over and over and over again for months and months and months, started to have something that resembled in some way a belief.
Interesting.
And does that sort of speak to you, this idea that if you recite something enough and try to mean it, which because he was taking it seriously, that you can really go for anything?
Yeah, that's true. And we know in public, the more you repeat something, the more likely people are to believe it. And so that's pretty unfortunate when you realize that so many mainstream or legacy institutions are captured by this ideology. And so one, these ideas seem legitimate because they're coming from these legacy institutions. And two, they're repeated so often and at such high levels that of course people are going to believe it. You have the President of the United States talking about this stuff, or you have people in these high positions of authority, you know, like WPATH, you know, putting out all these standards of care for trans children. So of course people are going to believe it.
One of the issues then is, and I've heard this said that, I mean, would you say you're a centrist, many moderate?
Yeah, I mean, I guess so. I don't really like any of the labels, but I typically, I wouldn't really say, I'm certainly not on the left. I wouldn't really say I'm on the right. I just like to think as freely as I possibly can.
Yeah, so, that's the aim. Yeah. But I would say the same thing, I think. Yeah. But roughly centrist. I was reading the other day that centrists are particularly vulnerable to this idea of like, I don't have any biases because I'm so in touch with my biases and I'm so, you know, this difficult position that we're in. And then we try, again, talking about what we were just talking about before, like you leave a cult and then you go really far another way. Some people on the gender critical side, which I would say without wanting to have a side is where we stand, take things too far, would you say?
Absolutely. Yeah. Unfortunately, that was something that I was kind of aware of a while ago, but it's something that has especially come to a head over the last few months for me, interviewing people like Stella O'Malley, who founded Genspect and has gotten a lot of hate from the so-called gender criticals and some of these more far-left feminist types. What's interesting is that once I started putting out some promos for my series, Uncomfortable Truths, I had, I think, Helen Joyce in one of them, Mr. Minow, Buck Angel, and I started to see a lot of the main people that were starting to follow me on Twitter were conservative Christians and far-left feminists. And so I would see in some of the far-left feminist bios, you know, like the raised fist, and like they wouldn't have their pronouns, but they would have other in kind of religious indicators, right, that they were a part of this kind of woke cult almost. And I've seen that firsthand where, you know, people in that crowd often really hate Buck Angel, for instance. So Buck is a biological woman, transitioned 30 years ago. In other words, took hormones and had a double mastectomy, passes very well as a man, but speaks out against the ideology, doesn't think it should be an ideology, recognizes that it's a disorder. We don't fully agree on everything. I think Buck believes that some people are truly trans and need these surgeries. I don't think that. But I don't care. I don't care if we disagree on certain things. The main thing is that I interviewed Buck in large part to try to, one, because I think Buck's story is really interesting, and Buck is very passionate and doesn't want children to get these surgeries. And I also always think about my Portland friends, like, who are they going to listen to? How can I reach somebody kind of on the fence or maybe who believes in some of this stuff? And so, you know, just when I tell them, they probably won't listen to me. But with someone like Buck, who's, you know, had 30 years of this experience, tells them, they're more likely to listen. And so, you know, Buck has been just, in my view, unfairly maligned and hated. And I've even had people police pronoun usage on the gender critical side. You think that that's just a thing that the trans activists do, but it's not. It's a thing that the gender critical people often do. They say, well, if you call Buck a he, him, then you think Buck is a biological man and you're denying reality. And it's like, no, I can hold two thoughts in my head at the same time. Mm. You know, I know that Buck is a woman, and it doesn't really bother me, and it doesn't hurt any children. It doesn't hurt anyone to say he, him when referring to Buck. I don't think that that's true. And the hate that Stella has gotten is just especially irritating to me because, one, now I really like Stella, but before I knew Stella, before I was friends with Stella, I saw her film Trans Kids, It's Time to Talk, which if you haven't seen it, it's I think one of the best films out there on this subject. And she was new to the topic. She had never studied any of these things. And the filmmakers just went around with her and had her talk to all these kids who either had taken these drugs or were thinking about it. And the main premise is she had gender distress as a kid and thought that, you know, that she was a boy and was very insistent about it and eventually grew out of it, going through puberty, becoming a woman. Now she's very happy in her, you know, in her body. And so her main question was, could any of these kids be like I was? And so I thought it was a very poignant film. But there were a couple things she said in the film that people just latched onto and said, oh, see, she's not on the right side. And so she lost a bunch of friends who are pro the trans agenda. You know, a lot of friends blocked her and got very angry with her. And then also on the side that we would ostensibly be on, you know, a lot of those people also gave her a lot of hate and continue to do so. So it's, you know, the topic itself is depressing enough. And then when you have a whole bunch of people who you would think would fight with you against child transition and against men and women's spaces, et cetera, they turn on you in an instant because you don't say the right word or whatever. So it does become very cult-like. And like you said earlier, this is a kind of a feature of human cognition, sadly. Mm.
Yeah, so. I think a lot of it comes from defensiveness as well. Yeah, like threat sensor, the amygdala starts ticking.
Totally,
you get. I mean, I see it happen. I feel it in me. I feel myself becoming more entrenched in opinions as people on the other side start attacking me. I become more defensive and more entrenched.
Sure.
So I start by saying like, hey, I think it's totally acceptable. Okay, the pronouns are cool. Anyone what they want. And then the more I start getting messages of abuse from people who really believe insane things, the more I start to go, oh, screw you. Screw you. I'm not going to now be polite. I'm not going to, you know, and that's a problem, as you say. I mean, we know historically from like de-radicalization, extreme Islam, things like that, we know that the best bet is to get someone who was formerly part of that to go in and not judge those people, but just to say like, what you and Peter Boghossian do, this thing of like, how can we get you from like a 9 down to an 8?
Right.
You know, maybe don't actually go and blow these people up. I mean, the Western values are terrible. I agree with you. I agree with everything you're saying. I'm on your team, but don't actually, we don't need to use violence in this particular case. Very gradually move people. And if we're coming out and just screaming at one side and the other side's screaming back,
right?
How are we going to change minds?
Yeah, no, I think that's a really important point. You know, I myself get very, I think it's something Carl Sagan said, which is to be obsessed with reality. And I am obsessed with reality. It is actually a little difficult for me to use like he, him for somebody I know is a biological female. It just doesn't quite click in my brain. Mm. But
Buck, though. Buck Angel does look so manly.
Sure. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
But you know, so I'm sympathetic to this idea of like, oh, we need to push for clear language and we need to be very precise about these things. Because we ultimately do want to save children from harm or even adults that have been captured by this ideology. But I do think the pragmatic approach is the one to take. So you mentioned, you know, like a suicide bomber, for instance, if you can be more, I think whatever works to get them from not blowing themselves up and other people, that's fantastic.
Yeah, yeah.
you don't have to convince them to be an atheist, for instance.
And trying to won't work.
Right. Yeah, it's not going to work. And I think it's going to cause more problems. So you have to like not only pick your battles, but also be intelligent and reasonable about how you approach certain types of people. I think the approach is really important. Mm.
And then it's about, are we trying to just win an argument or are we trying to actually convince minds? I suppose the other argument with the pronouns, what I've been hearing from a lot of gender critical people recently is, well, if you start saying she, it's much harder to say she can't come in the women's bathroom. Mm. And that, I mean, I think that's logical as well. So then we're weighing that up with, yes, but you're also not going to be able to convince people away from a dangerous ideology if you don't go along, if you don't give some it's somewhere. So these are the two things I guess we're weighing up.
Yeah, it's challenging. Yeah. And I know Kelly J. Keene has this hashtag hold the line. That's her main thing. She wants to always hold the line and has to be very stringent about that. And I get it, but I do think that in certain circumstances it just doesn't make sense, especially when you're holding the line against somebody, for instance, like Stella, who's done more than most people I know to help, you know, detransitioners, to help families. She founded GenSpec, which, you know, gives help to all these people that are what they call lost in transition, who either regret the transition or want to detransition or just don't know quite where to go. And they've just done such great work. So when holding the line comes at the cost of defaming somebody or trying to ruin someone's movement who's done so much good in this area, I think you have to ask yourself, what are you doing?
Yeah.
And is it really like she spent hours and hours on Twitter spaces, you know, deriding this conference that happened in November of last year in Denver that GenSpec put on. It was a fantastic conference. I don't think there's anything that they would probably like really disagree with too much. Some of these gender critical people at the conference. I mean, there was disagreement, but the overall goal is to stop children from taking these drugs and getting these surgeries and stop men entering into women's spaces. If we can achieve those two things, the other stuff, I'm sure there are other issues, but those to me seem to be the most important. And yeah, like you said, I think we need to be somewhat flexible in figuring out the best way to achieve those things.
There will be people as well commenting, some extreme gender critical people and extreme trans people saying, these are two men talking about something that is not for men, it's for trans women. They'll say that. And on the other side, they'll say this is about women and two men are saying it. Later, I'm interviewing a trans person called Katie John something.
Okay.
And again, I know I'm going to get shit from both sides
because
Katie is sort of is one of those who's a bit in between, understands both sides a little bit. And the gender critical will say again, here are two men discussing what is a woman's issue. Right. But I find that really difficult because I think that's a very woke argument coming from what is supposed to be an anti-woke. This idea of like you can only comment. I think, of course, it's important to take into consideration the people this really affects. But
of course,
you have to be able to opine, don't you?
Of course, yeah. I mean, that's something called standpoint epistemology. So your standpoint in the world in other words, your immutable characteristics, what makes you a biological woman, or, you know, whatever it is, it can be, this is where intersectionality comes in. It could be, you know, a black woman or disabled, whatever. That gives you a particular viewpoint on the world, and your epistemology follows from that. So in other words, you have the lived experience that makes whatever it is you're about to say about your position and dealing with these issues, somehow it makes it more true. But who cares if two guys are talking about it? If what they're saying is true, then what they're saying is true. Yeah. I mean, why does it matter if we have light colored skin or have genitals that don't match the people? It makes absolutely
speak
no
for yourself,
sense.
Mate. Mine, true, yeah. Mine match whatever. No,
they're fluid.
Also, what we're seeing, I guess, on the gender critical side is it, and almost something that might turn into a war in itself. And I guess it's what you're touching on.
Yeah.
You've got sort of like an atheistic left gender critical, and you've got a religious right. Is that what you're seeing?
Yeah, yeah. And interestingly, I've gotten both support and hate from both of those sides. I showed the first episode of my series at the conference that I mentioned, the GenSpec conference, and it has Buck in it. And, you know, I got people, we did a Q&A afterwards, and I got some of the more gender critical leftist types. I mean, I don't know exactly how they would identify, but that's my assumption based on their comments. You know, this one woman held up her phone and said, do you know that Buck has done porn and shows Buck's porn? And I was like, yes. And I don't think that that's relevant. I don't see how that matters to this conversation. You know, that I wasn't highlighting Buck's porn. I wasn't promoting Buck's porn. This is just not relevant.
Don't keep saying porn on YouTube.
Sorry. But anyways, she was very upset. She huffed out into the hallway and like showed everyone else what was on her phone. And I thought it was kind of hilarious, really.
Oh, so she's going around now showing the stuff.
The pictures.
I love that.
Yeah, yeah.
Like there's like a Simpsons character. There's one of them. I can't think of the children. There's one.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
Love that.
Yeah. And then I got somebody else afterwards who gave me a very firm handshake, this older gentleman, and was like, oh, I loved your film, but you really need to think about removing Buck from the film. And I was like, oh, wow. And I'm completely convinced that this is a very, very conservative Christian. And I had a number of people tell me that. They told me to re-edit my film, take this person out of the film. And it just blew me away. I've never had people tell me to re-edit my film. And I was thinking, well, do you want to give me several $1,000 so I can fly somebody else in? And you know, it's just like, this is... And the interesting thing is that there was no problem whatsoever with any of the content in the film. So there were no arguments against what anyone said, including Buck, because I think, you know, I included stuff in the film that I agreed with, and I think they all agreed with me, and they all agreed with basically everything in the film. There were literally zero comments about, oh, well, I didn't like what Buck said here, or I didn't like what Stella said there. It was not about that. It was just, there's an aura about these people. It's like, it's like a mystical spell. And if they're in it, then there's something wrong with it.
Do you think it's fair to surmise then that because the gender ideology is so insane, and I think it's bonkers. And I'm willing to say that. I think it's completely insane that it moves us emotionally in such a way that we move away from enlightenment values, basically that an individual, providing they're not causing obvious harm. And I know people might say, but what about the, you know, if you call someone a woman, then they might, it's harder not to let them. That's quite abstract. And that's quite, you know, if someone's not really causing harm to other people, that they should be able to pretend they're a banana. And if it doesn't affect me, and as long as they're not allowed into banana changing rooms and banana prisons and banana sports teams, couldn't care less. And I actually embrace their insanity, providing it doesn't bother me.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I think one could make an argument that often it does affect other people in their family, or, you know, sometimes older men will transition because of being autogynephilic, which is an attraction to oneself as a woman, as a man.
Yes.
But
even so, I mean, I saw Helen Pluckrose arguing this point. She was getting a lot of abuse as well. And she was saying, so what if they are getting a kick out of it? We don't police people's thoughts.
Yes. No. The point I was making is that if they're already married and they have children, this can be very challenging for the kids and for the wife. So I think that's something to take into consideration. If they're single, I mean, who cares? I mean, wear a dress, whatever, you know, I personally don't care. So yeah, I do think it is complicated because there are so many factors, and we do have to think about at least how it affects people close to us and society in general. But I ultimately take your position that, you know, if they're an adult and they want to do this, that they should be allowed to. At the same time, I'm worried about this cultish ideology that convinces even adults that they're born in the wrong body. And then they get out of the mystification of the cult and they realize, oh, wow, I just, you know, lopped off my testicles and et cetera. And I don't actually think that this is good for me. You know,
absolutely.
So I've talked to a lot of people like that who were adults when they did the surgeries and stuff. And so, you know, again, I don't want to ban these surgeries or anything like that. But I had an interesting disagreement with Peter about whether or not 25 should be the legal age, because the brain is fully formed and perhaps fewer people would be, you know, would regret their surgeries and hormones less. I think it's really tricky. We don't have a legal precedent to set it at 25, but, again, the woman I interviewed was 30 when she got her double mastectomy, and then 33 when she detransitioned. So I'm sympathetic with both arguments. I mean, I do think that we have to weigh those carefully. And then there are other factors, like there are all these new surgeries that have cropped up because this has become kind of a fad. And then you have these like money seeking surgeons who are just out to, you know, do as many surgeries as they can. Like there's an Irish woman in, I think, Florida who boasts about this and posts TikTok videos for children and saying, you know, you don't have to be 18 if you have parental consent. And I mean, it's just, so there's so many. It's complicated, I guess, is what I'm getting at. But I ultimately agree with you.
Even as you speak, I'm thinking, okay, I'm flip-flopping on what I think. Mm-hmm. They're like, oh, well, an individual should be able to cut off whatever they want, especially if they're 25 or older. Even if they're 18 and older, maybe you could argue that. Or they can go to the army. In the UK, they can have a drink. Or maybe, I don't really know. And then I'm going, well, hang on. We wouldn't have a doctor just cutting off your legs. They're not supposed to do things. So I'm flip-flopping on this the whole
way. It's
hard. Yeah. Really hard. Yeah. And then I guess, you know, we talked about what happens when we get too tribal and entrenched in our opinions on like a gender critical side, on sort of that woke side, I suppose the same thing's happening. And I've seen I've got a lot of sympathy with the pro-choice side, for example, of that debate. But then I've seen people sending pictures of their aborted fetuses to people to piss them off and stuff like that.
Yeah,
that's when you want to like grab someone and go, okay, I know why you're emotional. I know why you're doing this.
Right.
Stop a second.
Yeah.
And think the same thing with gay rights. You go to like a gay pride. I was at gay pride in Berlin and there was, I sort of looked down and there was just like a guy who had gone down on another guy. Everything was just out. And I thought,
wow,
I've never seen that in real life. It looks funny in real life. It's like, oh, that's, I've never seen that. And I didn't want to see that. And there's kids around. And
totally.
Upsetting for, I mean, so many gay people I've spoken to are so offended by this, that what was supposed to be a really important and serious civil rights battle has now become about showing the other side, look how, but that's what, that's human, isn't it? You become, and that they're sort of doing it in an FU kind of way, you know?
Right. Yeah, there's two things that brings to mind. One is that it's funny, all the people that I know who are gay or lesbian or even who identify as trans, like literally all of them don't like the LGBTQ whatever labeling. Don't
the
think
alphabet
it's
people.
Exactly the alphabet people. They don't think it's a cohesive community. They don't like the pride parade stuff. I mean, pretty much none of them, and none of them given to identity politics. So, you know, it's just fascinating that there are other people out there that do, you know, fit into that category supposedly, and want to foist that onto not only everyone else but even the people who ostensibly are like them. So I think that's unfortunate. And just to come back to this idea of kind of finding your locus of meaning in identity politics, I think I think it's what leads to that sort of thing, you know, sending the photo of this aborted fetus or, you know, doing these horrible things because you're so convinced that you know, you're on the right side of history and that you need to convince these other people, because there's not a better, more grounded sense of purpose and of identity that isn't so fickle and so, in my view, deranged.
You did some videos responding to woke people on dating apps Portland, which is like the woke city.
Yeah, yeah.
Tell me a bit about that.
That was just kind of an offhand thing that I decided to do because I'd never really used dating apps before, but I had a pain condition where I had to lie down for basically 4.5 years of my life.
It was
miserable.
Oh, sorry to hear that.
Thank you.
Good to see you out though.
Yeah, no, I couldn't sit for more than a few minutes at a time. And so there was no way for me to go out and meet anyone. So I started using a dating app. And thankfully I got better about a little over a year and a half ago, almost 2 years ago. So I'm pain-free at the moment. But anyways, I just started noticing, especially in 2020 when the riots just really kicked off. I mean, there were riots and stuff before that in Portland, but 2020 was the worst after George Floyd died. And I just started noticing, like, it was something like 30 to 40% of the people I was seeing on these apps were super woke and were saying, you know, BLM in their profile and just a bunch of really deranged things. And I would have people, even girls, try to match with me and then argue with me about how it's important to burn, you know, buildings down because that will move racial justice in the right direction. And I was like, oh, wow, I don't really agree. And they would just like preach to me through the app. I was like, what is going on here? I'm just wanting a date, you know, like, and so, you know, and what's interesting is like, you can generally filter, speaking about the trans thing, you can generally filter, like, you're a heterosexual man, you want to meet a heterosexual woman, you can filter out the non-binary and whatever thousand options that they have now. But that doesn't matter. You can select what you want, but you will still see a bunch of people, a bunch of men, who often don't even try. I didn't post any of those pictures on the video because I didn't want to out anyone or cause anyone trouble. But my God, they just don't even try. They're clearly just men with beards and penises, and they're trying to date other men. It's bizarre. I mean, it was so bizarre, and I just kept taking screenshots of these, and I accumulated so many, probably a few hundred, that I think I ended up doing like three different videos on it because it was just so deranged to me. So
they would say, some of them would say that you're a bigot for not wanting to have sex with the men with the beards and penises.
So I'm a bigot. I guess at this point, I don't even care. I've been, you know, people will call my work far right propaganda. And at first that really bothered me. People were calling me a white supremacist, even though I have black people in my, you know, film. Ayan Hirsi Ali, my good friend, Corey Drayton, who's a cinematographer, amazing, amazing guy. But, you know, eventually I just stopped caring about that. But what's funny is on those dating app videos, you'll see comments, you'll see people saying that, oh, this is just, again, this is some conservative Trump supporter. I've never supported Trump. And then I have other people at the same time saying that I'm woke.
Yeah, it's so annoying. I find myself in that position as well. So it's really nice talking to you but I know that, like, yeah, if I say something like, oh, well, I would never vote for, I don't like Trump. I don't like Trump. I do like him. I find him really funny, but not necessarily deliberately. Yeah. Sometimes deliberately funny and sometimes not deliberately. But I wouldn't vote for it. And that's also going to lose loads of people on that side. And what can you do? Tell me a little, so where can people find these videos and your documentaries? I mean, tell me again, this your bigoted channel.
Yeah, the bigoted channel is the Signal Productions on YouTube, and I have a Locals, which people can subscribe to and get a bunch of extra content, long form interviews and stuff, and be the first ones to see the content. And that's travisbrown.locals.com. And my first series is called The Woke Reformation. That's 11 episodes long, features people like Ayan Hirsi Ali and Vivek Ramaswamy and Neil Ferguson, Douglas Murray. And then the new series that I'm releasing is Uncomfortable Truths, The Reality of Gender Identity Ideology.
Who's a heretic you admire?
Who's a heretic? I would say Ayan. I mean, she's one of my heroes. She, you know, left Islam, I think in her 20s, and lives with 24/7 security. I mean, I don't know how you could not admire somebody like that. And a lot of people are now upset that she went from being an atheist to a Christian. I'm not a Christian, but I personally just couldn't care less. She's still, I think, you know, an amazing woman and has done so much for women and girls, especially when it comes to Islam. So
great choice. Thank you, Travis Brown. What a pleasure to meet an American and to have dined with you in the UK and to have done Street Epistemology with you and with Peter Boghossian. His episode's coming out soon as well, as is that of Yasmin Mohammed and some really cool... Oh, do you want to know who else? Ian McGilchrist. What an episode. He does a lot of research into the two hemispheres of the brain. Absolutely fascinating. And Giles Yeo, Giles Yeo is about food and weight and all that stuff. And what was I going to say? Oh, Rory Sutherland. What a nutter. He's on Chris Williamson quite often, and he's a marketing genius. So that's coming out. Stella O'Malley as well, the children's psychologist, talking about gender and things like that. So she's really good. So lots of varied and interesting episodes coming out. Make sure to follow Travis Brown on Twitter and to get hold of his YouTube channel, which is called The Signal.